Hello and welcome to Talent Takes Time, conversations with inspirational women about how they achieve success in the television industry. Today I speak to BBC Five Live Breakfast presenter Rachel Burden. She can also be spotted on the red sofa of BBC Breakfast TV, so she knows all about setting her alarm for ridiculous o'clock. I managed to grab Rachel just after one of those early radio shifts. I want to talk about your career, and obviously anyone's career is a combination of talent, of luck, of hard work, of timing as well. What sort of role has hard work played for you, though, throughout your career, do you think?
It's funny, I was thinking about this just the other day because I was thinking about my daughter, who at 14 years old doesn't really know what she wants to do, but in her head she does, and she wants to go on the stage, and I'm constantly trying to put her off that, and she accuses me of not allowing her to follow her dreams. But I was thinking about it being a combination of luck and perseverance. It's both those things, isn't it, in any career that you have. So I always think I've been quite lucky. Opportunities have come my way. Unexpectedly, I've had good support from people. People have shouted about me, and that's been really helpful. But perseverance is always an element of that. I don't think you can have the one without the other.
Yeah. Do you feel that you've been knocked down? I mean, a lot of people tell me that it's never a straight ladder, and sometimes they had to take some turns and some roads that led down somewhere that they didn't expect. Has yours been a straight pathway, or has it taken diversions?
Well, I think if you look at it on the face of it, it looks fairly straight, because I came out of university, I went to journalism college, I then got a job in local radio, in a very small BBC local radio station, and then got a job at a bigger local radio station, and then moved from there to Five Live, where I've been ever since. And so that looks kind of fairly conventional, that trajectory. But within that, my passage to kind of getting on air and being a presenter was slightly more challenging. And I think when I started out, I didn't know I wanted to be a radio presenter, but I wanted to work in radio. Radio is my love. And that was the thing, that was the environment I wanted to be in. So I didn't really mind what I did. I just wanted to create, craft lovely radio and be part of that. And then as I spent more time in it, I thought, well, I think I could have a crack at the presenting thing. And I just want to have a go and see where I can get with it. And that took a bit more persistence, because at the time, my boss in local radio, who was great in many ways, but she just felt like I didn't really have what was needed there. She felt my voice was really scratchy and I sounded too kind of breathy, and that perhaps I didn't have the maturity that was required at that time. So that took some period. I don't know how long. I mean, I'm going to say somewhere between 6 months and a year of me nagging just to be given a go, like to do a depth shift. Yeah. Which, you know, okay.
Can I just pick up on the voice thing? Because it's interesting, because I was told the same. I was told that I was too girly. My voice was very high pitched. I would come in at the beginning of sentences and I wasn't speaking from my diaphragm. And the funny thing is, I did a little bit of voice training, but mainly I did it myself. And I ended up with a much lower tone. And I think now it's quite sad, because people are encouraged to just be themselves. And obviously now radio is full of different voices, different personalities and such diversity. And I feel that we're perhaps from a different generation where you weren't really allowed to have your own voice. You had to have a certain voice. Would you say that's right?
Yeah, I think that is possibly true. And I don't think that, bar regional accents, which is again very different now, but I don't think men were being told, like us, your voice is too low or too high, were they? So there is, or was, a perception that for women's voices, they had to be a kind of certain timbre and a certain kind of tone to make it easy on the ear. But I think that was just nonsense in many ways. Now, that said, I do acknowledge that I was in my 20s and I was still at that stage of my life where I was going out a lot and staying up late at night and having a few drinks, and consequently, and my voice is vulnerable, I did sometimes sound like this, yeah, which wasn't great. So I did sort of have to acknowledge that. And as time has gone on, you know, I've got a bit old and boring, and I'm quite sensible about protecting my voice in some way. So I cannot go clubbing, not that I do anymore anyway, and certainly not at the moment, but, or I can't go to a wedding and speak over high volumes of noise or music and expect, yeah, to be able to do that the next day. It just won't happen.
I'm pleased Rachel spoke about this. In essence, what women are being asked to do is to sound more male. Apparently, that gives us more of the magic word gravitas. Listen to Rachel's voice now. Clear, concise, mature. Imagine if no one had taken a punt on her. That's why we must take advice, but take it cautiously.
A few of my guests have said the same. Don't assume every piece of advice is the right advice. When I started out, I had a really girly voice and was told to get voice training. But I missed that voice. It was my voice. Females that enter the industry now are allowed to sound just like themselves. But sadly for us, we were not.
I just wonder if there have been any moments of rock bottom. It's obviously difficult when you've got such a successful career. You would always imagine it's been plain sailing for you. But perhaps in the early days, have there ever been times where you just thought, you know, everything's going against me. This isn't going to happen for me.
Well, I can think of a couple of knockbacks. I mean, first of all, I started doing a bit of presenting at Radio Bristol, which was brilliant. And then I decided I should perhaps look to move to Five Live, which had always been my ambition, because that was all I ever really listened to at home anyway. And that, I felt that was absolutely my kind of ultimate home. And I sent off the demo tape and got like the absolute standard, I'm not sure they'd listened, rejection letter of, nah, we're not looking for anyone, thanks very much. Not even a comeback in 6 months. And that was fairly kind of cut and dry. And then I can't remember whether this is before or afterwards, but there was a point then I was thinking, well, I'm not going to get anywhere further here necessarily, so maybe I should go in a different direction. And I decided to apply for a job at Radio One just as a reporter there, and I had an absolutely disastrous, humiliating interview, which for me is a life lesson in not going for a job that you don't really feel you're suited to, because I just wasn't. But it was the kind of, oh, I've got nothing else to kind of go to, and maybe this will be a way out and into something else. And I remember them asking me questions about pop culture, and I couldn't answer. It was just awful. It was just cringy. You know, had they asked me about news or sport, that would have been fine. But like the latest whatever, I was hopeless on. And I remember just feeling utterly humiliated from that. But it was a good lesson in the sense of, okay, I really know where my strengths are, and that is not the right place for me at all. And in a way, it was quite good, because then I sort of thought, well, here at Radio Bristol, where I was at the time, I can do a good job. I know the area, I know the patch, I love the audience, I love the people, and I'll stay here, really. And I probably would have stayed there. And then that's when the luck came in, because having been, like, there weren't opportunities in London for me particularly, I didn't want them. I was presenting at Radio Bristol. Five Live had said, no, we're not really interested. I kind of settled down to think, okay, well, I'll stay here and really make my career here. And then one of the top bosses within the West region at the BBC happened to talk to the controller of Five Live at the time, Bob Shannon, and said, look, I think you should listen to Rachel. I think she might be a good fit for you. All of which happened without my knowledge or without my instigation. And it was as a result of that conversation that the then boss at Five Live physically drove up the motorway, because you couldn't listen online at the time, to tune in to see what I was like. And then off the back of that, invited me to come and do some shifts for them. And so that's how my move to Five Live happened.
I love this story, because so often we're rejected from a place that we end up working for. It's happened to me too. Sometimes I get my rejection letters out at various talks and mentorship schemes, and students are amazed to see how many, especially from companies I now work for. So no is not always the end. In fact, it's often just your starting point.
What would be the biggest piece of advice you've got for people who want to follow a dream, whether it's in broadcasting or journalism or any other thing that they may be dreaming of?
Gosh, I think it is really hard. I think it's really hard at the moment. I think the industry is narrowing, you know that. But I think the one advantage young people have today and young women have today is that you've already got a platform. I often say to young or aspiring journalists that I talk to nowadays that everyone is a broadcaster. Everyone is curating stories today, whether it's on Snapchat or Instagram or Twitter or whatever it is. So hone those skills and have your ears open to the conversations going on around you, because you're seeing stories around you all the time. And fundamentally, it's ideas, you know, new ideas. I always again say that you bring ideas to an organization, you'll always be in demand, because people are always looking for something new and fresh. And also increasingly in a media industry, which has been, I suppose, dominated by a certain type for a long time, you know, they're looking for people who don't represent, you know, the typical old school journalists, for people from all kinds of backgrounds, and bring that, you know, into your profession or your aspirations, because I think increasingly broadcasters are wanting to much more accurately reflect the people that they are broadcasting to.
When I was a young reporter, I had a meeting with the head of BBC Five Live. I was petrified about having children and how it might affect my position in the industry. He gave me the example of a couple of female presenters who he said had blossomed since becoming mothers. He believed their split focus allowed them to be a little bit more relaxed on air as perhaps their priorities had shifted. It was refreshing to hear and encouraging to know it was on the BBC radar too, but it does, of course, have its challenges.
I've got an army of people who help me. I mean, Danielle has been with us since our youngest was born, and she's incredible. She's his second mum. My husband knows that he takes third place to her in the pecking order. So it's just about me at the top, and then Dee, and then Luke.
You have four children, right?
Yeah. And actually, I've never really had full-time childcare before, because then prior to that, when I lived down south, my mum came up and helped all the time. So she's the other kind of part. She's the other general in the army, if you like. So I rely on all these things. So we kind of muddled through initially with the first three. Then we moved up north. The fourth came along. We realised we really did definitely need some more consistent childcare. So she comes and she does mornings for us, which is brilliant. So obviously their dad is there in the morning. He looks after them. And then he starts work, and Danielle comes in and takes over until I come home. And I have a quick kick if I can. And then so I have the afternoons at home. So it all, you know, works quite well. And we're really fortunate. I know that it's a nightmare for many women, but we found a pattern that works. But the other thing I'd say is also the army of sort of friends around you. So I'm sure it's the same for so many people, but just relying on friends and neighbours the whole time to step in. And I mean, I just think a couple of weeks ago, we were away on holiday, amazingly, visiting family in Devon. And our dishwasher was kaput, which is an absolute nightmare in any household, you can imagine. But this one's on two or three times a day. And the repairman was late, and I'd organised for someone to be there, and she couldn't be there. So, you know, a friend and neighbour just came and sat there for an hour, a couple of hours. So yeah, you're always, you know, using the resources of your team of friends around you, aren't you? So it's a whole combination. You can't do it on your own.
Yeah, I think as soon as I admitted and I realized that I can ask people, and actually people like to help, and you can kind of have a bit of a bartering system, then you don't have to feel guilty about it, because the guilt, the mum guilt, is endless. And if you can find another way to not feel guilty, then I think that's really important.
Yeah, I don't feel guilty about much these days. I really
good. I think it's really, really important. When I've been speaking to other women, some of them are saying that they're starting to be a bit kinder to themselves, and we have to be.
It was great to hear Rachel say she didn't feel guilty. I try not to myself. I have a technique I use, which is redefining time. If I try and do everything right and balanced in a day, I will fall short. Some day I can be a good mum, others a good worker, but usually not both in a day. But over the course of a week, I can. That's not just the case with motherhood. It goes for any number of roles we take on. Exercise, for example. I may not be able to work out every day, but I can find time within a week. So I try and remind myself of this often. Rachel is a wonderful example of talent that she's gained over many years of hard work and practice. And even now, she makes sacrifices every single day in order to do the job she loves and is so good at. I'm so pleased she was able to share her words of advice. Thank you for joining me on the 3 T's, Talent Takes Time. I hope you'll join us for more frank and open conversations as we delve into the world of TV presenting. See you very soon. Talent Takes Time is presented by me, Alison Bender. The series producer is Gary Hayes, and Matt Alabaster has produced all our artwork. Taylor Hayes mixed this episode and also composed our music. If you'd like to know more about my career in the media, you can follow me on Instagram, Twitter and TikTok at AliBenderTV. You can also sign up to my website, alisonbender.com, for more information on getting into the media industry. This has been a production for the Highway 61 Network.